Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
A crop acreage report document is a crop grown on a farm or a ranch, its intended use and location.
What information is needed for crop acreage reports? Farm Service Agency Administrator Bill Bean.
Producers can contact their local FSA office for acreage reporting deadlines that are specific to their county. To file a crop acreage report, producers need to provide crop or crop type or variety, intended use of crop, the number of crop acres, a map with the approximate crop boundaries, your planting dates, planting patterns when applicable, producer shares, irrigation practices if any, acreage prevent planting when applicable, and any other required information.
This is Agriculture Today.
Vietnamese firm signing $2 billion in MOUs, Memorandums of Understanding, to buy U.S. farm products like corn, beans, and pork, aiming to secure a trade deal and pause President Trump's 46% tariffs until July. That's according to Reuters. The agreements include $800 million from Iowa over 3 years, which is set to boost export prospects as farmers there face $4.2 billion in losses. Vietnam's zero tariffs on U.S. corn and soybeans since April have sweetened the deal, potentially lifting soybean prices by 5%. Farmers online on social media praising the deal but worrying about non-binding MOUs and future tariff risk. Well, the EU is exploring tariff cuts on U.S. fertilizers, which could lower input costs for farmers by 5 to 10% amid global supply chain disruptions. Now, high fertilizer prices, up 20% last year, squeezing farmer margins. A deal could save U.S. farmers $1 billion annually, countering cost pressures from Trump's steel tariffs. That's according to agriculture.com. EU talks set to intensify next month also aim to ease U.S. pork export barriers, which should benefit hog producers. Well, USDA's delay of a quarterly trade report citing internal review has quite a few worried about missing critical data on cotton and livestock exports. The report expected June 6th influences market strategies, and its absence is now fueling fears of political meddling amid tariff disputes with China. Cotton producers already facing China's 15% tariffs risk misjudging export demand, potentially costing $500 million in sales. Traders online are slamming the delay, demanding transparency to navigate volatile markets. And ASF, African swine fever concern, surged after World Pork Expo discussions in Des Moines ended last week. That as global outbreaks threaten U.S. hog farmers' $1.2 billion export market. The virus, with a near 100% fatality rate, decimated Chinese herds in 2018. And new cases in Europe are raising biosecurity fears as U.S. producers are investing $100 million in feed tracking and testing to protect herds, but costs cut margins by 10%. Farmers on social media urging stricter import controls, citing risk from Canada's pork tariffs. And U.S. farmers grappling with persistent labor shortages, with 2.4 million farm jobs needing workers as domestic labor shifts away from ag. H-2A visa program, which certified nearly 385,000 positions last year, is critical but increasingly costly. Rising costs and regulatory hurdles like the Department of Labor's Farm Worker Protection Rule are straining farmers' budgets. Bipartisan calls for H-2A reforms include streamlining applications, freezing wages, and aiming to ease the burden, but delays in Congress add uncertainty. It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The U.S. is the breadbasket of the world, thanks largely to family farms. Unfortunately, the farming and agriculture workforce is aging and nearing retirement, and fewer young people are looking to take over their family's farms or enter the agriculture industry.
Florida Senator Rick Scott at a recent committee on aging hearing.
With more farmers leaving the field and not having someone to pass their land and legacy onto, we face significant challenges to agricultural production, rural community sense of sustainability, and U.S. food security. Here's why this matters. U.S. food security is national security. American farmers are the nation's oldest workforce, averaging 58 years. One-third of farmers and ranchers are over the age of 65. In my home state of Florida, that number is even higher, accounting for roughly 40% of all farmers. This group of aging farmers owns over 40% of U.S. farmland. And with more farmers retiring and fewer children looking to take over farms for their families, these farms and their legacies are at risk. The U.S. has lost more than 200,000 farms since 2007. That's 40 million acres of land being repurposed for commercial, residential, or industrial development, and 40 million acres of land that are no longer producing food and agricultural products in and for the United States. There are many factors that contribute to this loss. Most farmers aren't looking to sell land to a developer. They'd prefer to keep their family farm functional and to pass their hard-tilled land onto someone who can continue their legacy in service to the community. But more and more young people are turning away from their jobs in farming and agriculture, due largely to the increased cost of farming, which is especially difficult for small farmers and those just starting out. This next generation of farmers are facing increased regulatory burdens and operating costs. The national price for farmland has increased over 7% in 3 years, averaging $4,000 an acre. Over 80% of farmers work a second job. Farmers face many challenges, from natural disasters to inflation. Rising input costs, especially high energy costs, make continuing in the family business less attractive to younger generations. This is also true when accounting for death, property, and inheritance taxes that can make taking over a family farm overwhelming. New farmers face even steeper obstacles, including access to land. As older farmers retire, foreign and adversarial entities like Communist China look to gain a stronger toehold in the U.S. agriculture sector by buying their land. At this point, China owns more than 350,000 acres of farmland across 27 states. That is not an acceptable threat. American farmers also must deal with unfair trade practices, undercutting their product on an international level. Congress has not always done right by our farmers. The major legislative package aimed at supporting farmers and agricultural workers, the Farm Bill, hasn't passed since 2018. This is especially harmful for farmers who have suffered with rising prices for the last 4 years under the last administration. While President Trump is having success in bringing down prices and fighting to support American farmers, he needs Congress to act as well, and passing a good Farm Bill is the right place to start. Otherwise, we will continue to use outdated information, which compounds the harm done by other economic and regulatory factors. As a result, the burden increases on our aging farmers who want nothing more than to see their farm continue in trustworthy hands, for to find it harder and hard to find someone to carry on their legacy. The aging farm workforce and the loss of family farms presents a critical challenge to the sustainability of American agriculture. During this hearing, I hope to hear from our witnesses how we can better protect the heritage of our aging farmers and better secure the handover of farms to the next generation. We owe it to our retiring farm workforce to ensure the legacy can be continued, while ensuring our food supply and shoring up the security of our nation.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
You know, it is a good market right now. We're certainly pleased with that. I would say a couple months ago when we saw some dips in the market, we were a little concerned, but it came back, and so that's been good. And certainly profitability in our farms allows us to reinvest in them, allows us to buy equipment and so forth. And so, yeah, people have smiles on their faces. Certainly there's things that can challenge that. There's always challenges, but there's opportunities too.
Minnesota pork producer Lori Stevemeyer, a media past president of the National Pork Producers Council, says good prices today on the heels of tough times.
You know, that it absolutely is. And it's a good point you brought that up, because when you look at 2023 through part of 2024, those were our most challenging economic times since the early 2000s. So our industry lost a lot of equity. So, you know, during part of my presidency, you know, the market came back and we've had good markets. And the extended markets allow us to build some equity back into our business. So certainly did face those challenges a couple years ago, but it's good to have some profitability back.
Pork industry, though, is able to benefit from strong export demand.
Well, about 30% of our pork is exported, and that adds $66 of value to our carcass. So it's important to our business. Mexico is our number one export market, so we send the most amount of pork there. But China is important because we send a lot of what we call our pork variety meats. So parts of the pig that we don't eat here go to China, and that's almost over 50% of that. And so it's really important to have those markets there. It's also important to develop new markets, and we have some pork going to Vietnam, but we're certainly looking at Vietnam as an opportunity to expand our market and send more pork there. Vietnam takes some muscle cuts. Vietnam takes also that pork variety meats that I mentioned. They love pork in Vietnam, and they've had some challenges with African swine fever, so there's some opportunities to get more pork in there. So having a balance is key. And continuing to develop new markets is part of what we do at NPPC.
But it still comes back to the importance of having demand domestically.
You know, domestic demand has been stable. And actually, the focus of domestic demand is part of the National Pork Board. So the mandatory checkoff program, that's what they focus on. And I know they have a new campaign that they'll be working on to increase demand. But I would say overall, it's been stable, and, you know, consumers are looking for protein that's a good value, and certainly pork fits into that category. It's wholesome, it's nutritious, it prices well against beef, very versatile in terms of what pork can do, whether it's bellies, ribs, butts, hams, loins, pork as an ingredient. And, you know, I think that's why it's important for us as NPPC, when we're dealing with public policy, to make sure that our farmers can farm without excess regulation so they can continue to produce a wholesome, nutritious product that consumer wants that's affordable.
So what's the National Pork Producer Council's role?
We are a voluntarily funded trade association. So we focus on public policy, regulatory, and exports. And so we are really working on farmers' behalf in Washington, D.C. We work in partnership with some of our states and then also international. So, like I said, we're voluntarily funded, and we certainly appreciate that support from our producers to go ahead and engage on those key issues.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
As we all know, our farm workforce is aging.
At a recent Senate Committee on Aging, New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand.
On average, our nation's farmers are older now than they were when the last Census of Agriculture was conducted in 2017. Because of financial stress, many farmers who would otherwise retire have had to keep on working. Some farmers have faced pressure to sell their farms to other owners if their family doesn't want to continue operations. Meanwhile, a lack of training in rural amenities like broadband and childcare have made farming less appealing to younger families. Our farmers provide an accessible and abundant supply of food to our whole nation. But with increased consolidation and more farmlands being converted to non-agricultural uses, we are sending ourselves down a very risky path. Our duty in Congress should be to support our farmers whatever way we can. With a changing climate, rising prices, volatile markets, our farmers are facing many challenges that make success even harder. One of the most important things we can do to pass a robust and bipartisan farm bill that addresses the needs of the agricultural community as well as the nutrition and conservation needs to encourage a younger generation to returning to farming, we must invest in our rural communities. New and beginning farmers and young people who are returning to their family farm do not only consider the income that is tied to farming, they need to be able to access broadband and childcare and health care. We need to make sure that there is enough mental health support at a time when we see more farmers dying by succumbing to suicide. I have to say that the anxiety and stress caused by the fluctuating tariffs that we are currently seeing hasn't helped. Our farmers need consistent policy to make long-term planting and investment decisions. They need reliability from Congress in an unpredictable profession. Approximately 20% of our agriculture is exported, and farmers rely on those markets to make a profit. I look forward to a positive and productive conversation today to discuss ways we can support our aging farmers while making sure new and beginning farmers continue to enter the farm workforce.
The committee heard from witnesses, including the president of the American Farm Bureau Federation.
I am Zippy Duval, and I am a third-generation Georgia farmer, and I am president of American Farm Bureau, who represents farm families from all 50 states and Puerto Rico. And I'm fortunate to have followed my father and my grandfather in their footsteps on our family farm. Today, my son, who is a veterinarian to help support his habit of farming, we operate a beef cow farm. We raise broilers there on our farm, and we also have spent our lifetime restoring the land that has been in our family for over 90 years. As I travel the country and see farms across our great country, I see a lot of gray hair, and while the wisdom of older generations is critical, we must ensure that we make a way for young and beginning farmers to fill our boots. As this committee has identified, there are many challenges facing the agriculture communities, but there's also opportunities for Congress to support young and beginning farmers, including starting with a new farm bill.
And you're listening to Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
How much coverage do I need? I'm going to give you what I feel like is the generic economist's answer.
Shannon Sand, a University of Nebraska and Lincoln Ag Economics Extension educator. She's talking about how much coverage is needed.
It depends. Okay, so there are a lot of factors on how you can figure that out. And a lot of that is going to have to do with a little bit of what Matt talked about last week, which is things like risk tolerance, right? So risk tolerance, I kind of look at it in my mind as like how much money I have in the bank, but it's not just that. It is literally how much risk can you tolerate? A lot of people I've met that are farmers or ranchers say they never go to Vegas because they have no need, because they basically, with the market's volatile, they're gambling every day. So your risk tolerance is just that. How much risk can you tolerate? That could be how much liquid assets do I have available that if something happens, if some sort of a tragic, let's say a crazy event, weather event happens, and I have to have something to cover all my bills and my debts currently till I could get to the next year, you know, what is my tolerance for that risk? What available assets and things do I have to cover, again, that risk? And that is different for everybody, even within operations. And I'm thinking of family operations where a lot of times each person has their own entity, but they might be together, you know, and that can get messy.
And says there are some key considerations.
Really important thing to think about when you're thinking about just different insurance products in general. What are your needs, right? So what is my cattle operation? Oftentimes when people have cattle, they have more than one operation. Maybe you feed out. Maybe you also have cow-calf. Maybe you do some backgrounding in there somewhere. You know, you have multiple enterprises. So really think about what are your needs. How many different potential insurance products should you be looking at? Because it can get overwhelming really quickly, quite frankly. And I think this is a big one that I think about personally is what is your risk tolerance? Again, how much risk am I willing to bear? And what risk do I think, you know, how volatile do I think the markets actually are? So again, going with that, what is your risk tolerance? I think, you know, what resources do you have available aside from insurance? Again, I go back to emergency funds or having assets that, if needed to, that you can liquidate quickly. So, I mean, cattle are a pretty liquid asset. In general, livestock is, I think, cattle, swine, sheep, goats, all those things. Most of the time, you can liquidate those pretty quickly if you need to. But again, you know, what is your risk tolerance? How much risk do you think the market will bear and you can bear? You can also, like I said, look at your break-evens. That's a really important one to do. Figure out what your break-even is, because that can help you pick, again, coverage levels, because if it costs you $250, that's cheap, to raise a calf, let's say, to $550, okay, you need to make at least that much back to make sure you're breaking even and hitting all your marks. So, again, what is your risk tolerance? So it may cost you $250 to raise a calf, but if you've got more money in the bank or you've got other assets available that you can cover things if you need to, because, you know, bills are due all the time. So, like I said, I feel like risk tolerance is one of those big things to really look at and help you make decisions when you're picking your insurance options. So depending on what you're wanting to do, it's going to just will depend on what insurance option is best for you. And that's where, again, having a really solid insurance agent could be helpful.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Have you had the occasion yet where a group comes into your office, somehow they were put on a plane, put in a hotel, those things here, they have no understanding of the mathematics, but somehow there were Medicaid providers in your state that had plenty of cash laying around to fly people out to come lobby.
Arizona Representative David Schweikert.
Here's another Wall Street Journal article from a week or two ago talking about how many in the Medicaid systems here in the United States are enrolled in multiple states. So you actually have billions and billions and billions of dollars here. They're enrolled in multiple states. And even the discussion of could we just match data? And you actually get objections to this because the fraud is part of the profit model. I'm on Ways and Means. This is something Energy and Commerce is their primary jurisdictions. They're working through it. But if you just stack up the cheating, the misuse of the vacuousness, the absence of data to try to deal with the multiple enrollment of populations, if you actually start to stack these things up, how dare you call those cuts? How dare you? And why don't you care about the future of this government, the future of this society? We cannot handle the stacking of debt. Did I mention the $72,000 we borrow every second? And it only goes up. We have a model that says in the 10-year window, we're up somewhere in the mid-90s per second in borrowing. And we're terrified to tell the truth. Well, Mr. Roy, you may not want to be in the room for this one, because this is the stuff that gets you attacked at home. But it's math. It's the truth. It's the CBO numbers. Rising Social Security and Medicare shortfalls nearly drive the entire 2019 to 2033 deficit. This board is a couple years old, but the facts are the facts. We're terrified to tell the public the truth. The primary driver of debt is demographics. Go to CBO, and this board is actually today, what we're waiting for the update, but we've done some back-of-the-board math. The math is much uglier because interest rates are up substantially from when we calculated this 2 years ago. But you functionally have a country that, so this one's from 2 years ago, the 30-year debt, we were going to borrow $124 trillion. If you remove Social Security and its finance costs, Medicare and its finance costs, the rest of the federal government actually grew slower than tax receipts. These numbers, and we'll probably have the update on this from CBO in the next couple of months with the higher interest rates, the higher running debt. We have models now that say over the 30 years, we're going to be at 200% of debt to GDP. That number is no longer $124 trillion, maybe $170 trillion of borrowing. I don't know how many of you plan to still be alive over the next 30 years. Do you really think the world financial markets are going to finance our debt? You have Ray Dalio, you know, the multi-billionaire hedge fund who's now retired, who's actually been coming here to Congress saying, warning, the entire world's capital markets, because what China's borrowing, what Japan's borrowing, now Germany's going back into the debt markets, there's not enough capital in the world. When the United States is consuming 30 to 40% of all the money that goes to sovereigns, to governments, there's not. So what happens when there's a shortage of savings in the world to finance? Well, we can print money. Of course, that will set off inflation, so your life just becomes more miserable. And because so many of our benefits are all inflation indexed, you can't inflate yourself away from it because they go up.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Anything less than 80 degrees, but I would still say we're kind of hitting those really, like today, the last couple days, kind of been in the 50s and 60s. This is more of a situation of it's not that the temperatures are too cool for the plant, but we're actually introducing more issues with soil-borne diseases because they like the cool, wet conditions.
Tina Sullivan is a Kansas State agronomist on soil-borne disease.
The one that mainly comes to mind would be Phytophthora fruit rot, as mentioned in our latest e-update for soybeans and saturated soil conditions. If you think you have a soybean seedling disease or an issue, always feel free to reach out to, you know, your local K-State Extension office or get in touch with plant pathology in the diagnostics lab.